Our sermon text is just one verse this Sunday, and I'd like to ask Pastor Salu to read that in Quran.
Le sosui le tininya ini me wala le yua suru siya sute siwada yera yemi spemu no 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 yipami papu spemi spemu allo lo yera yemi spemu no no do yipami papu spemi allo lo.
John 15:11, Jesus said, I have said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. So the title of this sermon is Joy Made Complete. This is one of those astonishing verses in the Bible. It comes out of nowhere, and wow. Jesus said, I want you to have the joy that I have, and I want that joy to be complete. Now, that kind of sounds like wishful thinking, doesn't it? Because life has got lots of problems. Well, here is the situation that Jesus was in when he said those things. He was first with his 12 disciples at his Last Supper. And he had just said he's not going to be with them anymore. And he said, one of you will betray me. And Judas left. These were the inner circle of Jesus' disciples, and they knew then that things were going to come down hard on them. Now, here is one of the how they knew that things were going to come down hard on him. Jesus had gone to the temple, and he had stirred up all sorts of problems. He overturned the money tables, he whipped, and he said that you guys are a bunch of snakes that are balled up together. This place is a den of robbers and thieves. Okay. People didn't like hearing that. The whole city of Jerusalem was involved in this temple worship. It was important for their whole economy because in order to worship in the temple at that time, you needed to buy animals, and these animals were sacrificed, and then in the fires that burned these offerings, they were also, the parts were kind of cooked, and so people could eat along with God. It was an amazing thing, but people had to buy those animals. The place they bought it was in the temple. Okay? Now, the temple was the size of like 6 football fields, but it was walled around, and the actual building was a huge building with 30-foot golden doors on it. But outside of all that, there were animals that were being sold. You had to buy the animals in the temple. And in order to buy the temple, you had to pay for them. And they wouldn't accept credit cards, and they wouldn't accept the local money. You had to bring your own money there and then have that money exchanged for temple money so you could use the temple money to buy the animals. So this was the capital city. This was the center of worship. And Jesus was making a ruckus in it. And they knew that times were going to be tough on them. It would be like a religious group going into Wall Street and saying, this is a band of robbers here, And then they hacked the whole system, and so people lost their money. Okay. Somebody did that, they would want his hide. This is the kind of drama that was going on when the disciples were together at that Last Supper. Now, Jesus had already upset the Pharisees. This was a radical group of Jewish people who were so upset the way Jesus has preached that they had already plotted to kill him. And now he took on the establishment. So times were going to be really, really bad. And the disciples knew things were going to be bad for them as individuals. It was crunch time. They knew that as disciples, they were expected to follow their leader when times got tough. They wondered if they were going to be courageous enough to stick with Jesus, or would they be cowards? The story shows that they were cowards. This is a situation where Jesus says that astonishing thing that has been preserved to us in the Gospel of John. He said, "I've said these things so you might have my joy. And I want that joy to be complete." He said this in the darkest, most dismal time possible, and he was talking about joy. And he said, "I want you guys to have the joy that I have." And we know that Jesus didn't want to be executed. That he prayed hard, like there was blood coming from his forehead, that he did not want to be executed. But yet he was joyful. And he wanted the disciples and us to have that kind of joy. That's why it's in the Bible. It's there so that we could have that kind of joy that Jesus had. So the question is, what is that joy like, and how can we get it? Okay? Is that a good thing you'd like to get? Let's see what that joy is like, and then how do we get it? The great scholar about Jesus, Edward Skelebix, or who knows how his name is pronounced, but he said, "One of the clearest truths that can be found was that being around Jesus was like being at a wedding feast." This was something real. Being around him was being like at a wedding feast. And wedding feasts are happy events, and we've got a little clip of what a Jewish wedding might be like. And we'll see if it comes up. Okay, so being around Jesus was like being like in a situation like that. They didn't have those songs back then, but wedding feasts have been happy events all the time through history. So that's what the joy that Jesus was talking about there is like. Jesus exuded joy even at this darkest time. And he wanted them and us to have joy even at the darkest times of our lives. So this joy was being like being at a wedding feast, and it can exist even if you're sad, when everything is going wrong, Even when you're depressed, it is possible to have this kind of joy. Joy can exist at the same time that you're feeling sad. Many people have experienced this thing intensely when they've lost a loved one and they're at the visitation time and they see all these friends and they are heartsick inside, but at the same time they feel happy because all of these people are showing so much love. So you can be intensely joyful and intensely sad at the same time. So how do we get it? Why did the disciples, I just read the one verse, because why didn't the disciples stop Jesus right there and say, Rabbi, how do we do this? How do we get this kind of joy? You say we can be this way? Tell us how. And it's not there. They may have asked it, but it wasn't written down in the Gospel of John. So we have to figure this out from the whole of Jesus' ministry. So now I was thinking about making a nice animation regarding all this, but there's plenty of things going on in my life, and so you're just going to have to imagine this animation in your own mind. See the door up there where the video goes? It says there's a door there. Picture that. And the door says, open me to have complete joy. And then the camera focuses in on the three locks. There's three locks there, and then the animation shows a key, the first key. And that first key says, caring for others. Caring for others is a special kind of love. It's more than the kind of love that you have feelings inside of you. Caring love is that kind of love that works through action. There are lots of people I love, but I don't have caring love for everybody. I only have the caring love for those people that I'm in contact with, that I've listened to, or I've felt along with them, or I've had some need to help them. This is the kind of love that Jesus showed that we need to experience and do in our lives, to listen to the people around us. And then to feel along with their problems and to help them when it's appropriate. So that's one of the problems with this joy that I'm talking about. This joy requires us also to feel other people's pain along with us. And so joy also increases some of the pain in our lives, because we can be there for others and feel the pain that other people feel. When Jesus was on the cross, naked, mocked, helpless, in horrendous pain, death being a certainty, he called upon God to the people who were causing all this, and he said, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. And he talked to the poor soul, one of the poor souls that were next to him on the cross. He said, today, you and I will be in paradise together, ministering to another person even while he was in excruciating pain. And the Bible is just filled with that which shows that Jesus had loving care for other people. Now, I've seen this in my own life, and I'm sure you have in yours. When I visit people in the nursing homes or in the hospitals, those people that have joyful spirits, when I walk in there, the first thing they say is, how are you? How are you doing? How's your family? before even wanting me to tell me what's going on wrong in their lives, they want to know about me. That's not what I came there for. I came there to minister to them. But joyful people can't help themselves. They ask about others first. Now, some people have degrees. There's the PhD, people with academic degrees. There's the MDs, people who have doctor's degrees. MDs, people who have medicine degrees. And DDs, are dentists. Or even JDs, who are doctors of law. And all those degrees are great. But the greatest degree, the greatest above all the degrees, is the WD. The WD is the degree that we are given by God if we do well, and that is well done. WD, well done. We want Jesus to tell us and God to tell us, well done, my good and faithful servant. We do this by listening to feeling along and helping other people. So, in the animation here, picture that key. It says, loving care, caring for others, goes into the lock, it works. The second key, humor. Humor is a necessary part of joy. It doesn't have to be great humor. We don't have to be Jerry Seinfeld. We can just be our humorous selves. My favorite was Jack Benny. That was a long time ago. I thought he was so funny when I was a kid. And the funniest thing, and I've thought about it for so long, not everybody finds it funny, but he was saying he was being interviewed on The Tonight Show, and he said he had an old friend that had just died, and his wife had buried him in a rented tux. Now, who would bury their husband in a rented tux? Well, we can't be like those great comedians, but we can have our humor. And let's see what Jesus did. And we can do like he did. Jesus had lots of humor. If you go onto the internet and you write down what is Jesus' humor, you'll find all sorts of stuff. One of his types of humor was that we can do is exaggerate. When he was talking about people who were complaining about other people, he said, he could have said, you know, don't talk about other people unless you're okay yourself. But he said, don't talk about the speck in another person's eye when you've got a log in yours. Okay? And that's the kind of thing that we can do. We can exaggerate that way, and it just puts things in a lighter mood. And total exaggeration is funny. And to make a point, I had to have a colonoscopy. I had to drink a gallon of the most disgusting stuff you can imagine. And out came 5. Anyone can use humor by making big exaggerations. And another kind of humor that Jesus used was telling stories with a surprising ending. It's been said by scholars that the ending of the parables of Jesus were always so surprising. Now, we can't catch the surprise ending ourselves because the language has changed and we think about Jesus as being serious. But scholars say that many people probably laughed at the end of Jesus' parables because they were so surprising. I remember my wife's uncle talking about a new mattress that he and his wife had just gotten. He said the people at the mattress stores told him that he'd get the best night's sleep in a firm mattress. And so he bought it. And the first night he got into it, well, all of his life he had slept on these saggy mattresses on top of saggy springs. And he got onto this mattress and he said, I got onto it and I thought, oh, maybe they forgot to take it out of its box. And so he looked. No, I looked and see if, was there a board in there? No, there was a mattress. And he said, human beings are not designed to sleep on rocks. When early humans, when they had to fall asleep, they didn't fall asleep on the rocks. They would find a nice, soft, grassy place. And he said, this was like sleeping on a rock. And he said he grabbed his blanket and a pillow, and he went down on the carpeting floor, and that was a lot softer for the night. Now, this is the way that you can tell stories. Everybody has all these events going on in their life. It is so important to tell stories, especially older people to younger people, to tell the stories, because that is how they distill the values that are important to us. But it also helps to show that life has all of this humor in it going on all the time. So that's the second key, humor. Picture the lock, it says humor on it, put it in the key, it works. And the final key is don't worry. Jesus said, don't let your hearts be troubled and don't let them be afraid. Worry saps away joy. You can be sad and joyful. You can be in pain and be joyful, but I don't know how you can worry and be joyful at the same time. Worry takes away joy. God will take care of us. We don't need to worry. Money worries take especially the joy out of life. People buy stuff with a credit card because they think that this thing will give them fun. And instead of it giving fun in their lives, it causes stress when they finally have to pay for it. Worry absorbs joy. It's like a black hole that takes the joy stuff out of your life. And there is one way to take care of money worries. And that's by giving it away. Being generous. Giving money away means money doesn't have a hold on you. Generous giving is one of the keys that unlocks that door of joy. In a few weeks, you'll have the opportunity to make a pledge to this church of what you intend to do to give to the work of the church in 2016. That's an opportunity for generosity. And people always get a little nervous when you talk about money, but God doesn't need our money. God, who created the stars and our sun and the planets and everything and us, doesn't need our money. The reason why Jesus talked about money so much is that he did not want to have money be important in our lives. The thing he talked about most was love, but what came in second was money. So when the pledge cards arrive, don't be groaning, oh, all the church wants is my money. And I have heard lots of people say that. Look for it as an opportunity to bring joy to your life and put money in the place where it's supposed to be in your life. So be generous not only that way, but in every part of your life. not just in church, generous with your time, your talents, and open yourself to give yourself to others. Generosity, the third key, it unlocks the door to your life, to joy in your life. And this is a learning experience. This is a learning thing that each one of these things that you can do will bring more joy in your life that allows you to expand your humor. It allows you to expand your generosity and allows you to expand the desire to give caring to others. Let us pray. Lord, help us to have joyful spirits. Help us to care for others. Help us to see humor in this world you've created. And help us to have a spirit of generosity in all that we do. Amen.